Very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and welcome to On The Radio News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and I shall be keeping you company from now up until 14:30. Now, as you've heard, the court will resume next week, Monday, to continue. So tune in to Eagle FM on Monday to hear more about the updates. Now, it's Monday, the 8th of September, 2025, and the start, of course, of a brand new week again. And whether you're tuning in from your office in Windhoek, driving through Ochuarongo, walking on a farm in Grootfontein, or listening in from a classroom or a clinic. And talking about classroom, I take it that a lot of teachers and students and learners actually sitting at home. Perhaps maybe you're listening from your lecture hall class, I don't know, or a clinic anywhere across Namibia. Well, thank you for choosing to spend your afternoon with us. Now, as always, On The Radio News Analysis is where we go beyond the headlines, and we don't just tell you what's happening. We do get right into it and ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We'll examine the structures behind today's news, connect policy to people's lived reality, and bring in voices to help us make sense of where Namibia is heading. And of course, your voice matters right here on Eagle FM. Do share your thoughts with us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, WhatsApp, or through Eagle FM website and app. Now, from the hustle of Shakati to the calm of Swakopmund, from Khobabes to Katima Mulilo, to Ongwediva, thank you for joining in on the conversation this Monday afternoon. This is On The Radar News Analysis, Namibia stories unpacked and connected to the people who live them. Let's get into today's discussions. The Minister of Health and Social Services, Esperanza Lumindao, today addressed the media on the condition of pharmaceutical services in Namibia in an aim to restore stock levels, which currently stand at about 57%. She noted that the ministry is now procuring directly from international manufacturers and wholesalers under the Emergency Procurement Act. Now, this process enables the ministry to secure large quantities of urgently needed supplies, saving both time and money. The ministry says that this effort of procuring directly from international manufacturers and wholesalers is proving to be fruitful, having already generated savings of more than 221 million Namibian dollars. Let's take a listen directly from the mouth of the minister herself.
Director of Ceremonies, when we look at the ministry's spending on pharmaceuticals and clinical supplies, 1,898,754,680 Namibian dollars, which is about 15.5% of the Ministry of Health and Social Services budget, was appropriated to pharmaceuticals and clinical supplies procurement for the year 2025-2026. A figure that has been consistently increasing over the past couple of years. Now, yes, this demonstrates, of course, unwavering dedication and to ensure that we have sufficient resources. However, we have noted that despite this significant investment, we have faced severe challenges in the past years regarding the procurement of pharmaceuticals and clinical supplies. And so what does this say? It says, well, you're increasing the budget, but you're still having issues with the sustainability of your stock levels, and you're still having stock-ups. And that told us that, okay, fine, we have a problem, and there are certain things we need to address. So despite this investment, we face severe challenges in recent years regarding the procurement of pharmaceuticals, clinical supplies, resulting in reoccurring stock-ups in health facilities. For the past two financial years, the service level at the central medical stores has been less than 57%. Falling short of our required target of 80%. I don't like using the target of 80% because I feel that we can do much better than that, particularly for our population. I always feel like 90% and above is possible. But this just goes to show how far below our target we have been operating at. Now, it's important to identify a problem, but it's also important to identify what's causing the problem. So we've been able to identify that some of the issues were, number one, the lack of long-term procurement contracts. This is important, right? Because instead of going out and asking for somebody to supply us with Panado every 2 months, if you have a long-term contract, that means that this one person is responsible for supplying Panado for the next 2 or 3 years, and they can plan in advance, they can bring in large shipments, therefore stabilizing stock. Then number two, global supply disruptions. We mentioned it, I think, a couple of months ago. There were complaints. I'm not sure if it was vitamin A. It was one of them. And there were a lot of complaints and there was a lot of bashing. And then one of the things I said to FMRC at that time, CMS, pardon me, at that time, because they had come in and they had said, look, it's actually not necessarily our fault, but it's because the national supply has been disrupted. So sometimes the active ingredient is not there globally. But it is still, it was still technically our fault, because it is still our responsibility to educate the public and say, look, before you panic, we update you and we say, look, the reason why this will not be available in the next few months is because of this. Because a lot of times the reason people panic is because they don't understand what's going. And so that gap of communication must be addressed. However, global supply disruptions are a key part of sometimes the issue. Then an increased demand for pharmaceuticals, we have a growing population. Of course, there will be an increased demand, and that's why we have people that project what we will need over the next 3 years. If we need a Panado of this amount for 2025, what do we need for 2026 going forward so that we can plan? And we must improve on this. Changing disease patterns, number four, and then number five, limited storage and warehouse capabilities. Now, these challenges have led to have had a tangible impact on the care that we provide to our patients. Imagine a diabetic patient who relies on a consistent supply of insulin. And I think sometimes when you know, these issues are highlighted, there's sometimes a notion that is created that, well, you know, we are far from the people's issues. And I want to highlight that we are not. We understand the issues on the ground. We understand what this translates to for a patient. And that's why the executive director started off and said, it's not about finding a solution for now. Yes, a solution interim is good. But ultimately, the goal is to say, what will be the solution long term, so that we don't have to keep going through these issues time and time again. In addition to recurrent stockouts, we've also incurred challenges related to an insufficient and a bureaucratic procurement system, a lack of accountability within the supply chain, and I want to highlight this very importantly, substandard storage facilities, deficiencies in medicines, inventory management, and systems at all levels. And inadequate security and risk management related to the stock of essential medicines and clinical supplies across the supply chain. These issues have further compounded to the problem and hindered our ability to ensure a reliable and a consistent supply of essential medicines and clinical supplies. Moreover, the absence of long-term contracts has placed the ministry in a perpetual cycle of conducting emergency procurement. I'm sure you've all heard of these, to address shortages of medication in our health facilities. And while necessary in urgent situations, emergency procurement has proven to be a very expensive exercise, particularly when procuring from suppliers rather than directly from manufacturers. So, ladies and gentlemen, allow me to build upon the 100-day report of Her Excellency, the President of the Republic of Namibia, Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwa, which was delivered in July 2025. And in that report, Her Excellency, the President, gave an update on our progress as a ministry towards delivering on the Namibian government's commitment to develop a special vehicle for procurement to address the shortages of essential medicines. In line with this commitment, the Ministry of Health is taking decisive action to address this challenge. I wish now to provide an update on pharmaceutical stockouts as well as our interventions. In line with our commitment to transparency and accountability, I wish to update the nation on the immediate interventions as well as the long-term reforms being implemented in order to deal with the recurrent stockouts and the supply of the essential medicines and clinical supplies. On the 13th of August 2025, the Ministry activated emergency procurement protocols in response to widespread shortage of essential medicines. These actions are aimed, of course, to restore our stock levels, and this is particularly for about 75% of the key pharmaceuticals. This situation demanded immediate action, and we responded swiftly to mitigate the potential adverse consequences. To ensure continued access to life-saving medication, the Ministry is now procuring directly from international manufacturers and wholesalers under emergency procurement provisions of the Public Procurement Act 15 of 2015. Now, this approach is aimed at saving time and money while securing large quantities of urgently needed supplies by going directly to the source. We can ensure that we are obtaining the best possible prices, quality, as well as quantities, thus stabilizing the stock of our medicines and essential supplies over a long duration. We are pleased to report that the Ministry's efforts to procure directly from international manufacturers and wholesalers are proving fruitful. In the initial phase, phase one, we engaged with 41 pre-qualified manufacturers and wholesalers, receiving offers for hundreds of essential medicines and clinical supplies. We have evaluated the offers made in phase one and anticipate significant cost savings and improved supply security. Now, in relative terms, these offers have potentially generated savings of approximately 221 million. 494,485 million dollars and 81 cents.
Now, the last figure, the figure that you had last there, was where the minister is speaking about the savings that this process has helped them to cut on about 221 million Namibian dollars, all because they are now going directly to procure from international wholesalers and manufacturers. Now, of course, I did pose a question while we were there in terms of perhaps are we going to be able to hold the middlemen accountable for pricing medication for as far as even 20 times the normal price. And of course, she did mention that within her speech prior to the question that this is, has been a robbery, of course. And we just, you begin to ask yourself how, it has been ongoing for those whole many years and nothing had been raised by her predecessors. Of course, I mean, if we can call a spade, I mean, how would you allow using taxpayers' money to allow a middleman or a trader or a business person that you're working with to give you something that costs, let me say, for instance, for an example, 8 Namibian dollars, and then they come and cost 50 Namibian dollars or 70, up to 70 Namibian dollars, and you just blindly accept that and sign off and go. And this has been an ongoing process for many years, and now, of course, they're trying to take it in another route. Now, if this alone, in this particular short time, the ministry saving up on more than approximately 221 million Namibian dollars. Just think about how much more the ministry would have saved up if this had been put in place in the very beginning. Now, of course, sometimes we do like to criticize things and to criticize people when, you know, we barely understand what they are able to bring on the table, but that's for us to judge. Now, I did pose a question on in terms of accountability, whether those who had been, literally, let's use the word, been robbing the ministry are going to be let go or are they actually going to be held accountable. She did explain with also the executive director of the Ministry of Health and Health and Social Services, Penda Ithindi, also coming in to explain regalities around that. So we're going to take a listen to that, but shortly before when we do come from a short commercial break, we'll be getting right into that. To stay tuned, this is On The Radar News Analysis. We bring you the news, we analyze it, and also then give you a chance to come in and air opinions, air contributions right here on The Radar News Analysis. So right after the commercial break, we'll be listening to that. Nonetheless, prepare yourself to ring in on 083-288-401.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Anyway, my name is Dafa Epijuju. I'm from Eagle FM. Now, the doctor, allow me to call you Dr. Honorable. Now, the doctor mentioned something about, of course, the ministry saving up 221 million Namibian dollars. Now, it surprises me, and I think a lot of people out there, that it is only now that we're going in this route direction with the with the middlemen through whom the ministry was procuring this medication, upping prices even to up as 20 times the normal price. And of course, I appreciate how the doctor mentioned that we don't have a problem with the middlemen. I had a question in that regard, but then when you kept on, I now understood what you're trying to say, that the goal is efficiency. Otherwise, if middlemen were doing the right thing, that wouldn't have been a problem. Now, of course, knowing that which has happened, are we perhaps going to hold them accountable, or are we just going to throw it under the carpet and let it slide? Or are they really going to be held accountable? Because we're talking about taxpayers' money in this regard. I just thought maybe I could ask in that aspect.
First of all, we must realize that all these procurements were undertaken through the regulatory exemption that is provided to the ministry. So as far as the framework, the legal framework and the rules under which the emergency procurement was undertaken, whether it's through middlemen or women, or through what we are doing now, so it's within an exemption from certain provisions of the procurement that is provided for and guided by the policy unit and the Ministry of Finance. These procurements were also undertaken by the ministry through a process of reaching out, and so it depends then on how broad-based reaching out or inviting those emergency procurement tenders, how broad-based it was. Even what we are doing now, we are doing so through emergency procurement. We try them to be broad-based and seek out from them. So this way, the long and short of it, undertaken through the exception that is provided. But because of the emergency nature, depending on how you define it, so if you say that you need a product next week, it's likely that you will be priced through, you pay through the nose to be able to get a product that short, right? Plus also, if you are not broad-based, therefore, if you are not competitive bidding, but you look out from the field, they are not manufacturers, they are basically traders, right? So they would charge you and then you take it or leave it. But because of the essential nature of it, you are forced to take it. So to take one of it. So what we are taking issue with is the limited nature of that market outreach. You reach out to traders, very few of them, and then it becomes like a cartel type of something where price is more or less fixed. You know, you take it or leave it, and more or less hovers around the maximum benchmark, and that happens that way. So to say that whether they will be taken to account, I think that's a bit overstretched, in the sense that it is within the framework that is provided and is initiated by the ministry. Of course, if there is something that breaches the rules that are there, those are the aspects of the minister has talked about and the director has also talked about. Yes.
Thank you. So I understood the question a little bit differently, but let me just come in to add on what the executive director has said. I think let me paraphrase a bit. What you're basically asking is, you know, so much savings, and these are savings that translate to impact. So are we just focusing on the good, or are we also holding them accountable to say, but why were you charging? You know, is this sort of what I was understanding?
Correct.
Good, yes. So ultimately, and as I said, you know, and I've had this conversation with the other, my fellow ministers, and we said, look, if we try to, you know, move backward and try to resolve everything that has been done in the past few years, it becomes difficult, number one. Number two, it becomes tricky because, you know, you're then operating in a time where I had absolutely no oversight over, and it gets a bit sticky. And so that is the reason why your question is so relevant, because of you know, and I said a very important statement, and that's why I said our focus right now from the director to the deputy executives, to the ED, to the chairperson of the NMRC, the focus right now is moving forward. How do we construct the healthcare system we want, and how do we set a new norm? Because when you move backwards and you start saying, okay, but now these people must be held accountable, these people are the reason, you know, the health system is in this shape, all these things, it becomes very sticky territory and it becomes finger pointing. And because that is very sticky ground, what we are saying is we understand what you're saying, we agree with you, we're on the same page. And moving forward, that is the standard we intend to hold them accountable to. And it's a good question you asked, and it reminds us of what the executive director said, that we are crafting a new level and a new standard, a new accepted norm of accountability. You cannot just charge blindly, because that's what was happening. They would charge, and we don't really take consideration into, okay, but what is the manufacturer charging? Mm. But also then, because of the fact that, correct me if I'm wrong, but to this extent, the director might correct me, to this extent of going through all the drugs and all the clinical items, I'm not sure if you've had that exercise before. I'm not sure if that exercise has been done before. But because of the fact that this time now we're looking at everything, the goal is to say that, look, we're trying to craft a new norm, and now we know for every drug on that pharmaceutical item and on clinical list, the director has an understanding of all these manufacturers, what are they charging? And so even in cases where we have to do an emergency procurement, she knows to say, no, but this is 500%, we're not taking this. And so that's the insight it gives us. And moving forward, we agree with you, we will hold that level of accountability.
Very good.
Nonetheless, you did say moving forward, they will be held accountable. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. But of course, we'll be back shortly to bring you yet more news right here on the Radar News Analysis. Now, should you have some questions, 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend.
And welcome back. You are tuned in still on the Radar News Analysis.
Of course, I'm joined in studio by Dwight. We were discussing Hyphen Namibia be launching their skills census mapping today in Windhoek. Now, of course, it is a digital survey that will collect and measure how many skilled Namibians there are for the anticipated local skills participation that is outlined in the country's green industrialization. Good afternoon, Dwight, and it's a pleasure to have you. Kindly tell us more about the Hyphen project that's going on in terms of trying to map on skills that are going to be needed to fill this gap.
Thank you, Happy, and welcome to the listeners on this afternoon's particular, this midday. Well, lunch period, as obviously we started on this particular eventful week. I call it eventful, Happy, because this particular announcement comes a day before the green hydrogen, if I can call it sort of like the green hydrogen summit, or the hydrogen summit, that obviously the annual summit that takes place every year, this particular time of the year. which is slated for tomorrow until Friday, 2 days, but tomorrow into the rest of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular exercise, Happy, is, it's not anything new. However, it's something unique to Namibia's green industrialization roadmap, as I indicated, or as you indicated a little bit earlier in the introduction. The discussion here is obviously the one, this is now one based upon the much publicized industrial development, obviously taking place in the south of Namibia, but technically has been taking place in the south at the coast, at the Walvis Bay, Swakopmund area,
mm-hmm.
and then obviously also the envisaged third particular, if I can call it pilot project or pilot phase, which is later, which is way later, not even in this time frame of up to 2030, going to be in the Kunene region. So this has been one of those particular ongoing developments coming through. Now, you asked what specifically is this skills census mapping exercise. So Namibians would have remembered back in last year when Mines and Energy and the auditing firm Deloitte Namibia brought out the industrial baseline study, which was based upon Namibia's oil and gas participation, or trying to assess Namibia's oil and gas participation in the years to come, when we will leverage the, firstly, the pumping and the extraction of the oil and gas in the oil and gas fields. And that survey itself was done in a similar manner in terms of what this green hydrogen, or this hydrogen energy skills mapping exercise, is based upon. However, there's two distinct scenarios here, or it's a different features. In this particular skills mapping census, it's about mapping the skills that you and I have, Happy, or that the Eagle FM listener listening to us will obviously be having.
Mm-hmm.
The, with the industrial baseline study that was done for the oil and gas participatory scenario, that was about a holistic, if I can call it like a holistic assessment that was done. So from the local content, which is local content participation, which is identified as local businesses, local technologies, local entrepreneurial endeavors, specifically to the people on the ground in terms of, you know, the labor capacity, or the labor skills capacity to participate. Here in the scenario is just the skills aspect. So what the folks at Hyphen, alongside the Deputy Minister of Education of MESAC,
yeah,
that being Deputy Minister Dino Baloti, cited was that Namibians actually have to, you know, technically stand up to be counted in participating in this exercise. Now, you're going to ask me, Happy, specifically, you know, what does it actually entail, or what does, you know, why people have to participate? Just to draw back people to the way at the start, so I'm taking people like 3 years back, or 3 years back at least, that specifically in the green industrialization roadmap, the objective is to at least reach a minimum of 200,000 of Namibians to participate, from the construction to the installation of the various components in this, in Namibia's green industrialization, to ultimately reaching a very high level of between 400,000 to 600,000. I'm still staying on the numbers that I read in the industrialization roadmap,
mm-hmm.
the green industrialization roadmap, which was brought out at this in 2022, 2021, thereabout. So in that same time frame specifically, this particular exercise is now technically going national, because it went national today. It's about assessing in terms of, because much focus is, emphasis has once again been placed on the youth to step forward and, you know, sort of like participate in this mapping exercise. And there's obviously also the greater emphasis that have been placed by the speakers at this event on the various Namibians that actually have some vocational training behind them, in order, because they will be one of the most directly impacted, or directly participating, or planned directly in participating Namibians in Namibia's green industrialization.
Interesting, hey. And of course, while speaking at the launch of the skill census mapping today, of course, Deputy Minister of MESAC, Dino Balotti, did speak about AI, of course, and whether young or old that people should acquaint themselves in this regard. Could this also maybe potentially mean that for the mapping of hyphen, it could be maybe also technically require some sort of AI, or would perhaps require some sort of computer skills, or exactly where's the link between the two?
Just in that specific scenario, Happy, only two people technically spoke about the proficiency in these new particular programs, technologies that are obviously coming about. As you mentioned, the Deputy Minister himself. Another was a gentleman by the name of Dion Shizuka. Dion Shekuza, who spoke on behalf of being a youth leader, participating obviously in the hydrogen program, green hydrogen program of Namibia. The key thing that because they're the only two speakers that cited the particular proficiency in terms of looking at proficiency in terms of AI, this has not been emphasized as yet by any of the particular the sort of like strategic participants, that being Namibia's Green Hydrogen Program, as well as also hyphen Hydrogen Energy, that AI proficiency or AI skill sets are a must. Obviously, down the line, other particular roles, obviously, you know, things might advance, because the scenario has been, we still have to understand to what extent and how many Namibians will actually participate in this exercise.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very good reason, Happy, why I drew a particular comparison with the industrial baseline study that was done by the Ministry of Mines and Energy in collaboration with Deloitte Namibia. It was primarily to assess the industry, to assess Namibia's energy, Namibia's participation in oil and gas on a national holistic front. This obviously just looks at labor participation, mm-hmm. meaning what skill sets would be needed. So firstly, they would be looking at, do we have welders? So the welders, then obviously, if they find themselves to be a taxi driver, or they are unemployed or between employment opportunities, for example, they would then have to approach the various vocational centers to be assessed. Or they would have to upload on this particular platform, because it's a census mapping, it's technically a survey, what their proficiency is and ultimately at what level they might be. So all this is about Namibians firstly having to assess themselves and then primarily participating in this engagement. Mm-hmm. You also have to look at it in another scenario, Happy, specifically like, let's for example say a new commercial bank wants to enter the Namibian retail banking sector. So technically what this could potentially do as a disruption factor is that people that already work for the established retail banks in Namibia, some of them would resign and then join onto this new entrant or this new player coming into the Namibian financial sector. So that technically would mean that vacancies open up in the established guys, while the new entrant is obviously sucking up or absorbing existing talent in the sector. Now, this is also the same particular scenario that will obviously take place here, because there are other particular stakeholders that hyphen cited that they'll be working with. Two of them are the Construction Industries Federation of Namibia, CIF, and the other one is the Employers Federation of Namibia, in terms of citing and understanding what skill sets, what particular companies in terms of local content participation are already there, how many employees, you know, there would be specifically, who are some of the construction companies that are on the database of the CIF that have the necessary skill sets or the necessary certification in terms of participating already in the clean industrialization landscape of Namibia. So it's a multifaceted approach, but it's just focused on the labor component of Namibia and how many Namibians can participate in this discussion. As I mentioned, Happy, this clearly is a particular sort of like a particular development that comes a day before the annual Green Hydrogen Summit or conference that always takes place in the capital is about to kick off, because that is slated to start from tomorrow, as I mentioned. So in terms of the discussion from there, We will obviously see a lot more particular conversations popping up from that platform, which might not have been mentioned here at this platform in terms of the census mapping launching, stating, you know, what kind of skill sets might be looked at or would be desired or would be envisaged in terms of getting Namibians up to the optimal level so they can participate in Namibia's green hydrogen or Namibia's green industrialization development.
Mm. Dwight, thank you so much for making time for us right here. But I did want to ask a question in terms of what was the turnout number of the young people? Was it a lot? And just judging from the way they were maybe asking questions or just engaging, do they seem very interested in it or how exactly?
Well, Happy, specifically this was a high-level particular event because there was a lot of executives, a lot of particular, if I can call it, stakeholder partners. So I'm talking about leadership from, for example, like from affiliated programs.
Mm-hmm.
The deputy minister was there. If you're asking about the youth contingent scenario, it was just the youth ambassadors that were there, the green hydrogen youth ambassadors that were appointed back on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
That those are the only particular sort of like youth representatives. And this was a primarily a scenario highlighting or unveiling this particular census mapping exercise.
Okay. Dwight, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Not a problem.
Okay. And of course, our studio line is open. Should you want to come through and our opinions, ask questions right here on the Reading News Analysis, 083-288-401 is the number in studio. But otherwise, we pause here and take a trip to the marketplace.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the R.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Welcome back. Now, you know, today is Monday, and that means today's The Villager e-paper is out, covering the following headlines. Mitko to slaughter 75,000 cattle for the financial year of 2025-2026. Muchimangumwe woodwork generates over 100,000 Namibian dollars. Official launch of the 2023 Census Regional Report. Etango secures 1 million uranium offtake agreements. Sankwasa warns against external influence on traditions. Innovation at the forefront of Africa's financial inclusion initiatives. Nedbank hosts biggest city dash to date. Now, of course, this and more in The Villager e-paper on today's headlines. Grab that so you can read up on them more. Now, if you haven't subscribed to the WhatsApp channel yet to receive or to receive your tri-weekly dose of economic news, make sure that you send a text message to 081 200 4144. That is a WhatsApp text message. Now for that, let's tell you what's making headlines today in terms of economic indicators. Now today, $1 is equals to 17 Namibian dollars and 55 cents, while £1 is equals to 23 Namibian dollars and 76 cents. €1 is equals to 20 Namibian dollars and 59 cents. $1 is equals to 11 Namibian dollars and 58 cents. £1 is equals to $1.31. £1 is equals to 0.4 Namibian dollars. Now let's move over to trading economics. Chile's annual inflation eased to 4.0% in August 2025 from 4.3% in July. Now that is below expectations of 4.2% for the lowest price growth since April 2024. The slowdown was mainly due to deflation in clothing and footwear at minus 1.0% versus -1.4% and weaker price growth in alcoholic beverages and tobacco, housing and utilities, household equipment and maintenance, transport, information and communication, and recreation, sports and culture. Now, in contrast, inflation picked up for healthcare at 5.3% versus 4.7%, food and alcoholic beverages at 3.5% versus 3.2%, and insurance and financial services at 2.1% versus 0.1%. Now, on a monthly basis, consumer prices were unchanged after rising 0.9% in July. Silver futures climbed back above $41 per ounce, their highest level since August 2011. Signs of a cooling U.S. labor market reinforced expectations for Federal Reserve rate cuts this year. Now, the U.S. economy added fewer jobs than forecast in August, while unemployment rose to its highest level since 2021, exceeding a run of weak data, including ADP private payrolls. Iron ore futures in China rose to 790 Chinese yuan per ton in the second week of September, the highest in 4 weeks, as markets considered the outlook for steel production in key Chinese furnace hubs. Now, a portion of the market positioned for higher iron ore intake by furnaces as a conclusion of China's military parade meant officials could lift output suspensions passed to limit pollution that prevent clear skies. Now, this follows the improvement of margins for steel producers since the Chinese government pledged to reduce capacity in the sector to tackle defractionally pressures among manufacturers, which drove ore miners to lift asking prices. Now, concurrently, imports of iron ore rose to above 105 million tons in August, a 1.3% monthly increase. Still, the demand outlook remained muted as monetary aggregates remained persistent or pessimistic, and the official construction PMI infected the sector's first contraction since January. The consumer confidence index in Spain rose 82.9 in July of 2025 from the 19-month low of 76.1 in the previous month. Now, that is marking the strongest leading since January of this year. The improvement was driven by the index measuring consumer expectations at 84.1 versus 81.8 in June, while the index measuring current conditions also rose sharply from 81.8 versus 75.6. And that's what we had for you today in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. And our report's right here. And when we return, we'll be telling you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now we start off regionally. That is starting firstly off in South Africa, moving on to other sectors of the region. And then we move on to continental news and then bring you international news. Now we're starting off in South Africa in terms of judgment reserved in Lungu burial right appeal. Let's take a listen to that.
Judgment has been reserved in the Gauteng High Court in Pretoria today. This is in the dispute between the family of the late former Zambian President Edgar Lungu and the Zambian government. The family challenged a full bench ruling that allowed the Zambian government to repatriate his body for state funeral. Advocate Tembelang Mugaitobi, representing the family, says the binding principles allow a government to override the interests of a spouse, which he argues is a problem.
Interests of a spouse can be overridden by
the foreign government.
By a government. In this case, it happens to be a foreign government, but by a government. Now that, we say, is a fundamental problem. The second one is that a contract, my learned friend characterizes differently, over a dead body or over a corpse, is a recognized species of contract in South African law. Now those two principles, outside of the issue of prospects of success, those two issues are legal principles that will forever be relied upon. And you know, one of the reasons, Justice Lubaga, is that they will say this was a full court decision and it has an elevated status for future disputes. And they can ignore Justice Mokgwatleng's judgment as a single judge who decided a fact-specific case. But they can't ignore this judgment because this is a judgment given by three judges of the Pretoria High Court. And so those principles will remain with us, whatever happens. And that's why we ask that you kindly refer the matter for determination in the Supreme Court of Appeal.
All right. Now, SABC News reporter Kenima Panga has been following the court proceedings and joins us live in studio to share a bit more on this. Good afternoon, Kenny. Thank you for joining us. Mm-hmm. Now, we've heard there from legal counsel for the wife of the late Mr. Lungu, mm-hmm. stating, among others, that you cannot contract over a corpse, that mm-hmm. in such an instance, the law of succession would kick in. If there's no will, then it's interstate succession. Mm-hmm. Just unpack that argument for us.
Okay. Good afternoon to you, Mfundo, and to the viewers at home. At the outset, the original judgment found in the main that the Zambian government was entitled to repatriate the former president, his remains, for the purposes of a state funeral and burial. And the reasons, main findings it made, was that there was an enforceable agreement between the parties about Zambia being the final resting place of the late president. Then, of course, they used Section 177 of Zambia's constitution, which promotes its public interest, to reach the conclusion that the personal wishes of the family cannot outweigh the interests of the nation at large. And it is against that backdrop that the court ruled that the remains must be repatriated or surrendered off to the Zambian government for that process to begin. But now the appeal, the issue that is being had with respect to the question you're raising about the contract, mm-hmm. is that the Lungu family are arguing that you cannot base a contract or an agreement on a corpse, that that autonomous right belongs to the family, the loved ones, and in this specific case, the widow of the late president. So the autonomous right belongs to Esther Lungu, and it is only she who can decide what must happen to the remains of the former president. That right cannot be transferred over to the Zambian government. There's also a tension between which laws should have been applied in this particular matter. If it was South African law, or if it was Zambian law. We see the counsel on behalf of the Lungu family, advocate Nguyai Tobi SC, arguing that it is unsettling for a foreign state to approach a South African court and ask it to determine the issues based on Zambian law and not South African law. Mm. He emphasizes that because the Lungu family was in South Africa, whether it be temporary or they plan to stay for a long time, it's not really the substance of the issue. But the fact that they were here, the supreme law here is the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. And against that backdrop, the widow of the former late president enjoyed constitutional rights that should have been taken into consideration as well when the courts reached that conclusion. So they're saying that there are a number of questions of laws and principles that need to be resolved, not at the courts of first instance, but by the appellate courts, because they've been confronted with this situation for the first time, where you're seeing a former head of state in South Africa with his loved ones. He passes away in South Africa, and then the family decides that they want to bury him here, but there's also public interest rights in Zambia that they argue entitles them to bury him in his homeland. Mm-hmm. So because of the questions in the air, which advocate Nguyai Tobi argues run the risk of the deprivation of the rights of widows with respect to their spouses, mm-hmm. needs to be resolved in the appellate court before this issue can be decided as final. Mm-hmm. So they're stating that for the Gauteng High Court in Pretoria to grant leave to appeal, it doesn't necessarily have to agree that reasonable prospects of success exist if it goes to the SCA. Just the interest of justice permit for this matter to be heard by another court if there's a slight chance that they may reach a different conclusion on all these questions of laws.
Mm-hmm. Undoubtedly, there are a lot of legal questions to be answered. One wonders if it wouldn't even make its way to the Constitutional Court if already we're hearing questions around the constitutionality of attempting to interpret the laws of another country in our country. Mm. But then
South Africans speak about the blood moon in Cape Town yesterday.
As the sun set across the mother city, night gazers were in for a special treat. The partial phase was already underway from just before 6:30 p.m. Spectators gathered on the lawns of the South African Astronomical Observatory to catch a glimpse of the red moon. Astronomers say while not as rare as a solar eclipse, this lunar eclipse was significant in its own right.
Ordinarily, the sun's light would be bouncing directly off the moon. The full moon, which we'd see as a bright white object, now we're just seeing some reddish light. And the reddish light is because the moon is seeing from its point of view is all of the sunsets and sunrises around the Earth all at once. So the light is passing through the atmosphere of the Earth, the same as a sunrise or a sunset, and casting a reddish glow on the moon.
The eclipse, which could be seen with the naked eye, was visible to millions of people across Africa, Europe and Australasia, lasting for an hour and 22 minutes. Visitors were given the opportunity to view the blood moon through various amateur telescopes and were treated to tours of, among others, the historic McLean telescope.
At first, when we popped outside, we could see when it was starting to turn this red-orangish color. And then as we came in, we were given the opportunity to look through the telescopes, and it felt as if the moon was right in front of us, which was absolutely amazing. Right now, we're actually waiting to also see the constellations and how it looks next to the moon. And I'm actually so excited. I didn't think I'd get so excited about a blood moon, but it is really amazing to see and experience.
I absolutely love science and astronomy and things like that. So coming here and watching this with people who know so much about it was quite an experience, and getting to ask the staff here, it was amazing. And watching the Earth move in front of the sun and creating that red, and I understand why it does that now. It's a wonderful experience to go through, and I feel more informed and very privileged to be able to see it here.
So as we were coming, we saw it coming on. It was kind of like this orangey color. And then when we landed, when we got here, we were able to see it really kind of get smaller and smaller. It was the first time I really took note of it and really paid attention to anything like that. And it was very, there was even some locals who had their own personal telescopes here and were able to see it. Like this really, a really big one that he had, were able to look through it. I think it was really special to see it. You could even see some of the craters up close. It was really cool.
The September blood moon is one of the most vivid and long-lasting lunar eclipses in a long time.
Yeah, so I think that with the number of diverse cultures we have in Africa and, I mean, around the world, some people see the blood moon as a harbinger of doom, you know, something bad's going to happen. Others see it as, you know, new beginning or something really positive is going to happen, a lucky moon. So depending on the culture and their understanding or belief, it's vastly different. So, you know, I think it's just, as I said, it's a wonderful cultural event, and for different cultures it means different things.
Dr. Kanema says the lunar eclipse is a spectacular celestial event to garner public interest in astronomy. Vanessa Puna, SABC News, Cape Town.
Let's move on to Zambia, where Zambia is set to launch 3 new industrial yards in order to boost SME growth.
The Kafue Industry Yard in the Lusaka South Multi-Facility Economic Zone buzzes with a variety of production activities as enterprises contribute to the industrialization drive. 34-year-old George Msimuko, proprietor of Joe Classic Doors, is among the many Zambian youth running businesses in the yard. Mr. Msimuko says operating from the yard has not only expanded his business, but also grown his workforce from 15 to 45 employees in just 6 months.
We are working. We have been here for 6 months now. And these 6 months, it has been so good. This happens smoothly because of power, day and night. We want to thank you, government, starting from our president.
He adds that a 500,000 kwacha loan from the Citizens Economic Empowerment Commission has enabled him to manufacture doors in advance of customer orders, boosting both efficiency and profitability.
Titafika stage whereby tipanga ma doors yadi beba customers and bakabwera bagula, you just buy and go. Rather kumbuyo tezo ngara na ma challenges yokuyambana na ma customer because of delayment. Thank you so much. We are really happy. We appreciate. May you continue with the good work by government.
8 industry yards have so far been constructed in various provinces. Ministry of Small and Medium Enterprise Development Permanent Secretary Suweta Mutelo is optimistic that construction of 3 additional industry yards will begin next year at a total cost of $9 million. United States dollars. The 3 new industry yards will be financed by the African Development Bank.
We are hopeful that next year we begin to build the other 3 industrial yards that are supposed to be built in Central Province, Muchinga Province, and Southern Province. And each project is going to cost $3 million.
According to the Ministry of Small and Medium Enterprise Development, 1,150 jobs have been created in the industrial yards. Mary Kachepa, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
And we move on to Uganda, where PWDs embrace artificial intelligence to market their products.
Small workshop in Kawanda Village, Wakiso District. Persons living with disabilities are recycling materials into products while using artificial intelligence to reach customers far beyond Uganda. The initiative called Bambi African Market is run mostly by persons with disabilities who handle production, while another team supports marketing mostly using AI. One of them is Yasin Sentongo Kiza. In 2019, he was a street vendor in Boise, selling shoes to survive, but life on the streets was tough. Kampala Capital City Authority enforcement teams many times chased vendors away, sometimes confiscating their goods.
The city council doesn't care whether you are disabled or not. Sometimes, when they arrest you for breaking a law, they demand money, and they don't arrest. And if you don't have money, you're left helpless.
Being a person living with a disability, running from KCCA was exhausting. That's when a friend invited him to join this group of people with disabilities making different products.
It is not hectic. When heavy work like fetching water is needed, we ask non-disabled people to help so it doesn't get too hectic. We bring persons with disabilities closer, and those who are able to help us sell our products.
I choose to work with the disabilities because of the life challenges they do face. They are discriminated in the job market, so I welcomed them. We made an association, Bambi African Market, so that they can do something, and we help them to market these products by the use of artificial intelligence.
At Bambi Market Africa, the production team, mainly persons with disabilities, creates different products, with a signature product being Wonder Bags. The Wonder Bags are cushioned bags where food containers are placed inside after partial cooking, and the retained heat allows it to cook while keeping it warm. They say this innovation saves gas and charcoal, and they are also food warmers.
I used to be a footballer, but my leg got sick and I lost it. Football was a job. This business has given me a new way to provide for my family. I can afford food, rent, and take care of them the best I can.
Their marketing team uses AI tools.
Voici notre pot de fleurs. Vous pouvez l'obtenir sur notre site web Bambi African Market pour $30.
Use AI-powered applications like to use voice dubbing, to change the language. Sometimes we give out free information. And to access that information, you must subscribe to our website. Then after, when we create an advert, we send an email direct to an advert, direct to the inbox of the email holder.
They use AI to create promotional videos, dub them into different languages, and share them with audiences worldwide.
Thousands of free voices where you can use without copyright. Use AI-powered applications like Voice Labs to voice, to create realistic voices, which we can use to push to our customers.
But the use of AI raises legal and ethical concerns. Some admit they have used celebrity voices in promotional content without consent, sparking questions about copyright and misuse.
In the coffee industry, I used one of the Saudi Arabian influencers to market my services, and it yielded more results. I cloned his voice.
There's what we call phishing voices. A person comes and plays within the voice of a person. If we were to make a benchmark from other countries such as UK, a voice recording is considered to be a biometric data, because in security, we have people who use their voices for security purposes, that you will not access this safe, you will not open this door unless I use my voice. So any person who comes in to use AI and create a voice of a certain person, you're liable under the cybersecurity laws. You're liable under the data protection.
Uganda currently has no specific laws governing artificial intelligence use. The Ministry of ICT announced plans to draft a national policy last year, but the progress remains unclear.
Chinese hybrid goats transform Uganda's livestock sector.
Kenneth Mugaye Wenji has spent just 4 years breeding exotic goats in Uganda, and he believes it's the quickest way for livestock farmers to grow their business. He currently has about 100 exotic goats with about 50 kids that he sells to farmers who want to crossbreed.
We need more to breed these ones because there's not enough. But then when you have these, Ugandans have access to males from these ones to go and crossbreed our local goats. That way, even a person who doesn't have so much management capacity or financial capacity can manage, because the disease burden or the adaptation burden will be very low. The goats will be, the females will be used to their environment, only the male will be introduced to the environment.
Uganda's goat industry is mainly made up of local East African breeds that don't grow big or produce enough milk.
This farm in Mukono specializes in only hybrid goats. Farmers here say they grow faster, produce more milk and meat, and bring in more money compared to the local breeds.
Uganda is now aiming to improve productivity with exotic breeds from China. The big-eared goats are a key breed that will be used to transform Uganda's meat and milk industry. They are known for their rapid growth and quick adaptability to climatic conditions and can grow to 150 kilograms compared to the local breed that grows to only just about 50 kilograms.
They can produce 2 to 3 times a year, and they can produce 2-3 kids at a go. So meaning that multiplication is good. A number of times per year, but also a number of kids per production. So this is very good for a commercial farmer. Compared to some of our goats which produce one kid and maybe produce once or twice a year.
The hybrid goats are being kept at the National Genetic Resource Center and Data Bank, where Ugandan scientists, with the help of Chinese experts, are studying how to crossbreed them with traditional goats. This way, they will be able to multiply numbers faster.
As we have these goats, as we multiply them, there's an assured market in China. So the farmers in Uganda will be able to get market, to get income, as a result of trading between the government of Uganda here and the People's Republic of China.
The initiative under the FAO China South to South Cooperation Program will ensure farmers also get the skills on best practices in livestock farming. Breeders like Mugaye Wenji are eager to milk the scheme in order to grow their incomes. Isabel Nakiria, CGTN Mukono, Uganda.
Japan Prime Minister hopefuls to prepare leadership bids, markets roiled.
Japan's ruling party lawmakers prepared bids to replace outgoing leader Shigeru Ishiba on Monday. Ishiba announced the end of his brief time as Prime Minister on Sunday. He said he was taking responsibility for elections where his coalition lost its majority in both houses of parliament. They were hit as voters showed their anger at rising living costs. Ishiba instructed his Liberal Democratic Party to hold an emergency leadership election. A source said the party plans to hold the vote on October 4th. Markets were roiled by the political uncertainty and the possibility successors may ramp up government spending. Japan's yen sank and super long-term bond yields scaled record highs after Ishiba's resignation. Stocks then surged at the open on Monday. Investors noted speculation policies favoured by potential successors may strain the world's most indebted advanced economy. The frontrunners are Senai Takaichi, who would become Japan's first female prime minister, and Shinjiro Koizumi, who at 44 would be the youngest leader in the modern era. Neither has yet formally announced their candidacy. Takaichi would be notable for markets as she stands out for her opposition to the Bank of Japan's interest rate hikes. She's also called to raise spending to boost the fragile economy.
Huge drugs bust reveals battles on cocaine superhighway.
Now, the agency that coordinates the European response to illegal drug trafficking says too many shipments of cocaine are getting through because of a shortage of boats to intercept them. The Maritime Analysis and Operations Centre, which is a collaboration between 8 EU member states and the UK, says as many as 100 suspect ships weren't stopped or searched last year. Panorama's Darrett McIntyre reports.
If you look on the ground, there is a lot of little pots for using cocaine.
The UK's habit is getting worse. Since 2011, cocaine-related deaths have risen more than tenfold.
It tells me that if you want to have a war on drugs, you're losing, and losing badly.
Some drug traffickers are using Ireland as a backdoor to the UK. as the country has the lowest defense spending in Europe.
The narcotic superhighway comes right across the Atlantic, and one of the first countries it reaches is Ireland. So geographically, we're highly exposed. Our territorial waters are a free-for-all, really. It's like the Wild West out there.
One drug bust in 2023 shows the scale of the problem. Traffickers based in Dubai bought their own cargo ship, the MV Matthew, for around £10 million. On the surface, it looked legitimate, but its sole purpose was trafficking drugs. Its only cargo, cocaine. When it reached Irish waters, the traffickers sent a trawler to collect the drugs. But the trawler ran aground in a storm and its crew called the Coast Guard to save them. The Irish Navy had only one ship at sea. It fired warning shots when the MV Matthew refused to change direction.
Please do not fire at us. My crew now panicking, crying. Over.
You have no cause to be afraid. All I ask is that you proceed to Cork Harbour. Over.
The crew ignored the order, so Irish Rangers used their only available helicopter and dropped onto the deck in high winds. 2.2 tons of cocaine were recovered and 8 men have been jailed. But the organisation that tracks transatlantic shipments says Europe needs to do more, as 100 vessels suspected of trafficking drugs weren't even stopped last year.
We have intelligence of the vessel that's crossing the Atlantic. The problem right now we are mainly facing is not a lack of intelligence, it's a lack of interception vessels.
The Irish government says it is increasing defence spending by 55% and that it maintains a continuous presence and vigilance at sea. Dara McIntyre, BBC News.
The law enforcement agencies across Europe have admitted they are struggling to stop the growing quantity of cocaine crossing the Atlantic from South America. Now, the Maritime Analysis Operations Center, which polices the transatlantic drug trade, said 100 ships suspected of trekking drugs to Europe were not stopped last year because the authorities didn't have enough vessels to intercept them. Up to 600 vessels are monitored by Maritime Analysis Operations Center each day, while record amounts of cocaine are being produced in South America, said its director, Sijoed Top. Now, the drug is usually shipped in large container ships to European ports like Rotterdam and Antwerp, but security has been tightened there, so smugglers are looking for alternative routes. 5 people have been killed in Jerusalem shooting attack, officials say.
We're going to start this hour with that developing news out of Jerusalem. 5 people have been killed in a shooting attack there. Let's take you to the live feeds that we are getting in from the scene. This is one of them showing the emergency and security services there in the background, the buses and a bus stop. It's just gone midday. We understand this attack happened just after rush hour. 5 people killed. According to police there, 2 gunmen approached and opened fire. They were, quote, neutralized or killed. Many others were shot, injured and taken to hospital as well. And you can see here the scale of the operation and the security operation in the aftermath. Looks like even more vehicles arriving there. Our correspondent Yolande Nell is live at the scene for us. Yolande, we can just see that trail of vehicles coming in. Just talk us through the geography. What's behind you? Give us a sense of the scene there.
Okay, so this is a very busy road junction. We're between East and West Jerusalem here. And what was at the center of the shooting attack? The bus shelter you can see just behind me. A bus over there, still parked up. And there's one more bus in this direction. A short time ago, we saw bodies being taken away in body bags by the emergency services.
Yeah, ne. You know when you know what you want, but you're not sure either.
Right next to a bus terminal,
I know I want to study next year, but I'm so conflicted when I think about the field I want to get into. Sometimes I lean more into business, you know, the money. But other times I really want to get into IT because it's like a passion thing.
Yo, there's a lot you need to think about. But at least NASC gives you the option to choose two programs that you'd like to study. And you can just make your final decision come registration.
Really? Do tell.
The NUST applications are officially open for 2026. So don't walk, my brother. You must run to NUST and apply today.
Check out the 2026 prospectus at www.nust.na. Namibia University of Science and Technology, reinventing the future.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkona Nadingi program brought to you by Loise Shimi. From Indah Fayapijuju, it is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful day ahead.